Let's get down to business. Taking a look at Wall Street, Dow Jones Industrial Average down 6 at 20,656. S&P 500 down 1 at 2355. NASDAQ Composite down 1 at 5877. Russell 2000, small and mid-caps up a fraction at 1364. Yield on the 10-year Treasury up 3 basis points at 2.37%. Oil up 65 cents at $52.35 per barrel. Gold up $2.20 at $12.54.80 per ounce. It's a jobs report Friday. The economy added 98,000 net new jobs in March, far fewer than expected. The unemployment rate dropped from 4.7% to 4.5%, and that is the lowest level in 10 years. The January report was revised lower from 238,000 to 216,000. The February report revised lower from 235 to 219,000 for a loss of 38,000 jobs from the earlier reports. A more accurate measure of the pace of hiring, the three-month average, shows the U.S. adding 178,000 jobs a month so far in 2017. Now that's down slightly from 187,000 a month in 2016, well below the recent high watermark of 250,000 a month that we saw in 2014. In March, the year-over-year change was 2.13 million jobs. It's decent job growth. Despite weakness in March, the labor rally is fairly healthy, and it would be difficult to maintain a hiring pace above 200,000, at least for any length of time. Now, there are a couple of explanations for this month's weak number, and it basically boils down to statistical noise. February was unusually warm and pleasant weather for much of the country, resulting in a surge of hiring, especially for construction jobs. In March, the East Coast was hit by a blizzard during the time when researchers were gathering data. So there will be revisions to the March numbers, much too early to call a trend. Economic growth has been steadfastly sluggish, not matching the strong jobs numbers from January and February, so maybe we're just seeing a reversion to the mean. The latest report will only add to the debate over whether so-called soft data, like stronger sentiment among businesses, is actually prompting companies to hire more workers. March's data suggests it is not. The weak headline number also a stark reminder that it'll be difficult to add significantly more jobs to the economy at this late stage in the recovery. Unlikely the U.S. will start adding 300 or 400,000 new jobs each month. Just not going to happen. The change in the jobs numbers really is the best single number to understand the state of the economy. While it has a lot of month-to-month statistical variance, it's a fairly reliable indicator, especially if you average a few months together. It's a reliable indicator of whether the economy is growing, contracting, or stagnant. And now, with the jobless rate at 4.5%, the binding constraint is the number of available workers. And that's a combination of demographics, skills, and pay. The demographics boils down to birth rates, death rates, retirement rates for the boomer generation, plus immigration. The skills are constantly evolving, and employers are constantly bemoaning the lack of skilled workers. Yet as much as they complain, there has been a movement away from job training programs, which were once the forte of unions. And the wages component, well, if wage growth were stronger, you would expect it to have the positive effect of pulling people on the bench into the labor force. People who don't see the value of working for $10 an hour might do so for $15. Wages are rising, but slowly, grudgingly. The Federal Reserve may think we are near full employment, but wages do not confirm that stance, not yet. Hourly wages for the average American worker rose 0.2% in March to $26.14 an hour, and the increase in hourly pay over the past 12 months slipped to 2.7% from 2.8% in the prior month. Although wages are rising faster now compared with a few years ago, they still aren't increasing as much as they normally do in periods of economic prosperity. In good times, wages tend to rise 3-4% a year. The retail sector continued to contract, with department stores in the process of closing up some 3,500 stores. About 29,700 retail jobs were cut in March, and the vast majority were from department stores that sell everything from furniture to vegetables. Meanwhile, online retailers, the big competitors to physical brick-and-mortar stores, they gained 2,200 jobs. Retail also lost 30,000 jobs in February, so we are seeing a trend develop there. And hiring in the construction industry almost came to a standstill, just 6,000 new jobs. That follows a huge gain in February. It was the second warmest February in the U.S. since the 1890s. Meanwhile, March roared in like a lion, the bad weather a likely factor in hiring for many sectors, not just construction. Most of the hiring was concentrated in white-collar professional jobs, with 56,000 added there. Healthcare and education added 16,000. Mining, that includes oil production, added 11,000. Also, 11,000 new jobs in manufacturing. And manufacturing accounts for, well, just 9% of employment, but it punches above its weight because factory jobs pay consistently more than many service positions. In recent months, blue-collar fields like manufacturing and construction have been very solid. That's a sharp contrast to late last year when service industries like education, business services, and health led the way. Private payrolls increased by 89,000. That means government added 9,000 jobs. It also means there was a big disconnect between today's report and Wednesday's report on private job growth from ADP, which showed 263,000 new private sector jobs. There are 1.7 million workers who have been unemployed for more than 26 weeks and still want a job. Now, that's down from 1.8 million in February. This was the lowest number since 2008. The U6 unemployment rate dipped from 9.2% in February down to 8.9%. That's the lowest level in almost 10 years. U6 measures unemployed plus underutilized workers, or workers who are working part-time for economic reasons. Of course, many of those part-time workers would like full-time jobs, so this indicates that there is still some slack in the labor market. Part-time work is still a contentious alternative for many workers. There were some 5.6 million involuntary part-time workers in March 2017, little changed from the month before, but down from 6.4 million a year earlier, according to the Bureau of Labor Stats. That number is up from 4.5 million back in 2007, but off the peak of 8.6 million that we saw in 2012. These figures are almost entirely due to the inability of workers to find full-time jobs, leaving many workers to take or keep lower-paying jobs. And 54% of the growth in these involuntary part-time jobs between 2007 and 2015 were in retail, leisure, and hospitality industries. That, according to the Economic Policy Institute, a think tank out of Washington, D.C. The EPI report found a prolonged structural shift toward more intensive use of part-time employment. Aside from the frequent lack of sufficient work hours, these part-time workers must also navigate unpredictable and/or variable hours, with their work schedules varying week to week at a rate more than double that of full-time workers. What's more, part-time workers suffer from a lower rate of pay and benefits coverage than full-time workers, such as access to health insurance and paid time off. Compared to similar full-time workers, men working part-time earn 19% and women working part-time earn 9% per hour. Involuntary part-time workers tend to earn less than their voluntary part-time counterparts, Approximately 40% of involuntary part-time workers report a total family income of less than $30,000, compared with just 18% of voluntary part-timers and 29% of the population as a whole. Part-time workers who can't find full-time jobs struggle to earn enough money to get by, even when they have multiple jobs. More than 4 out of every 5 involuntary part-time workers say it's hard to save for retirement, and about 7 out of every 10 say they earn less money than they and their family need to get by and pay bills. The persistence of such large numbers of involuntary part-time workers is an indicator of underlying weaknesses in the labor market and the weak hand of labor in the labor market. Involuntary part-time workers, twice as likely as voluntary part-time workers, to be forced to work on weekends and holidays, to be given unfavorable work schedules and job assignments. 53% of American workers say they're burned out and overworked. Some 34% of workers took a vacation last year. That might be one reason for the exhaustion. That's down from 42% the year before. Roughly 1 in 4 workers do not get any paid vacation from their employers. Many are low-income workers and are the least able to afford to take an unpaid vacation day. Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, the U.S. is one of the few developed countries that does not require employers to provide paid time off. The labor force participation rate was unchanged in March at 63%. This is the percentage of the working age population in the labor force. A large portion of the recent decline in the participation rate is due to demographics. The participation rate for workers aged 25 to 54, that's considered the prime working years because people are out of school and too young to retire. The 25 to 54 participation rate was unchanged in March at 81.7. Overall, the March jobs report was disappointing, but hardly a disaster. Remember that 8 years ago, the economy was hemorrhaging about 800,000 jobs per month. In March, we added 98,000, and the unemployment rate has been more than cut in half at 4.5%. Dow Jones Industrial Average today down 6 to finish at 20,656. The S&P 500 Index down 1 at 2,355. And the NASDAQ Composite down 1 at 5,877. As always, we invite you to follow along at moneyradio.com, live streaming and archived audio. The daily blog is eatthebankers.com, text, audio, and much more at eatthebankers.com.